think that's a beautiful hymn that asks questions of us about our faith and about our faith for the long haul. Thanks, Andrew. I have a very serious question for you. A very serious question indeed. Is your faith like a microwave oven or like a slow cooker? Is your faith like a microwave oven or a slow cooker? You're thinking, Gordy's lost the plot. Do you like a letter? Do you maybe still have letters from way back when? The still smell of that perfume or the rose petals? Or do you prefer an email? That every now and again you have to clear out the inbox. Which do you prefer? Good long conversation or a tweet? 120 characters. Maybe an Instagram, a picture with a little clip and hashtag pizza or something like that on it. Or maybe a good Snapchat that's gone again in 10 seconds. What do you prefer? Face-to-face conversation, maybe not the wisest place for it. Or FaceTime. Or Skype. Which is better? Which do you prefer? Fiber optic broadband. Or let's have a confession. Who remembers dial-up? And how many of us get really grumpy that we don't have that instant connection, that instant answer, that instant something or other? Dial-up does your head. And I know I sound like a grumpy old man, but here we go. Celebrities. Celebrities, fame without the effort. Wanting all the glory without the hard work. We live in this instant world. We live in a microwave culture. And folks, faith, it just is not like that. It's faith over the long haul. Your food is ready, ding! And you have this kind of meal. Might be Marks and Spencer's, but it's still a microwave meal. In Genesis 21 and 22, we come to the culmination of the story of the life of Abraham. And this was a faith that was over the long haul. If you look in chapter 21, just the first little bit, we read about the birth of Isaac. Let's actually just read the words together. So Genesis 21, verses 1 through to verse 7. Now the Lord was gracious to Sarah, as he had said. And the Lord did for Sarah what he had promised. Sarah became pregnant and bore a son to Abraham in his old age, the very time God had promised him. Abraham gave him the name Isaac to the son Sarah had born. When his son Isaac was 8 days old, Abraham circumcised him as God commanded him. Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born to him. Sarah said, God has brought me laughter, and everyone who hears about this will laugh with me. And she added, who would have said to Abraham that Sarah would nurse children? And yet I have borne him a son in his old age. A promise is fulfilled. A promise that was actually made 25 years earlier. We read in Genesis 12, verse 4, that when the promise was first given, Abraham was 75. And here in verse 1 and 2, a miracle is observed in the life of this little child. There's an act of obedience in verse 4, when, as God had asked of Abraham, the children, the male children, would be circumcised on the eighth day. So there's an act of obedience. Obedience has been built in to Abraham's life, even though on occasions he had just completely blown it or made a fool of himself. And there's a witness to others. If you read into verses 6 and 7, everyone who hears about this will laugh with me. Who would have said that Abraham said to Abraham that Sarah would nurse children? People were talking. Other nations were maybe talking. People in countries or in the areas that they were walking and mixing through. There was a witness to others in this story. But this is faith over the long haul. Remember we said a few weeks ago, God's delays are not necessarily God's denials. But he knows best and we trust him. I trust in him. I trust in him. This is seen very clearly in Abraham's walk. Hebrews 11, verse 11, by faith he, Abraham, considered him faithful who had made the promise. There's a promise that is fulfilled. Because the Lord is trustworthy in all he promises and faithful in all he does. So for you this morning, is there a place of holding on to God's promise in your life? Whatever that might may be, and for whatever reason that might be, with whatever issue that might be. But you're maybe like Abraham in this 25-year wait for the fulfillment of God's promise. In verses 8 through to 21 in the passage, there is a promise frustrated. There's the story that's picked up again with Hagar and Ishmael. Born out of Abraham's disobedience or Abraham's lack of faith, or maybe also tied in with that, Sarah's nagging and her lack of faith in this promise. But in the story here, there are consequences from the disobedience and the lack of faith before. Look at verses 8 through to 11. Child grew up and was weaned. And on the day Isaac was weaned, Abraham held a great feast. But Sarah saw that the son whom Hagar the Egyptian had borne to Abraham was mocking. And she said to Abraham, get rid of that slave woman and her son, for that slave woman's son will never share in the inheritance with my son Isaac. That's interesting. The matter distressed Abraham greatly because it concerned his son. We'll just stop there. But there are consequences that we live with at times to our disobedience and maybe our lack of faith. And sometimes we have to live under the fallout. But there's a beautiful thing in the story here, and we don't have time to unpack it properly and see where, even now today in the Middle East, living with the consequences of this story. But there is compassion in the story. Look at verse 17. Abraham sends Hagar and Ishmael away, and they're in the desert, and they're dying with lack of water. But verse 17, we read these words. God heard the boy crying. And the angel of God called to Hagar from heaven and said to her, what is this? What is the matter, Hagar? Do not be afraid. God has heard the boy crying as he lies there. Lift the boy up, take him by the hand, for I will make him into a great nation. And then God opened his eyes, or her eyes, and she saw a well of water. There's compassion in the story in the midst of the mess and living under the gracious hand of God. Maybe for you this morning, in your walk of faith, there are frustrations. There is fallout from past mistakes, very often in relationships. But know that God sees you, and know that God's heart feels for you and wants to bring you on, and he does not forget about you. Maybe we're living under the fallout, but we're also living under the gracious hand of God. A promise fulfilled, a promise frustrated. And a promise tested. Sorry, I just catch up with myself. A promise tested. I do not like the story in Genesis 22. Thinking, is God endorsing child sacrifice? He cannot be. That does not fit with the character of God at all. But we do read, and Hebrews 11 maybe helps make a bit more sense of it, that Abraham is being tested. In Hebrews 11, and please turn with me if you would, to read this little section. Hebrews 11, verses 17 through to verse 19. By faith, Abraham, when God tested him, offered Isaac as a sacrifice. He who had received the promises was about to sacrifice his one and only son. Even though God had said to him, "It is through Isaac that your offspring will be reckoned," Abraham reasoned that God could raise the dead. And figuratively speaking, he did receive back Isaac from death. I say, I don't like the story, but I know that it's a story of testing and not God endorsing sacrifice, because he hates it. Abraham knew the character of God. In the story that we thought about a wee while ago about Sodom and Gomorrah, Abraham says in his pleading with the Lord, "Shall not the judge of all the earth do right?" Abraham knew the character of God, and again, "I trust in thee, I trust in thee. I'm going to walk by faith and not by sight." Genesis 22, sorry, I'm making you jump back and forward this morning. Look at the story. Take your son, your only son whom you love, and sacrifice him there. Now, in essence, not the only son, but because Ishmael was a son as well. But not the son of promise, not the child of promise. Take your son, sacrifice him there. Just case in point, verse 4, the journey to Mount Moriah took 3 days. That was 3 days of conversation. That was 3 days of processing this challenge to surrender that which is most precious to you. That must have been the most horrendous walk, for 3 days with your precious son, 2 servants, wood with you for the sacrifice. But as Abraham says to the 2 servants, as he and Isaac go on, you know, "Stay here, we will worship, and then we will come back." What's going on in this story, in this challenge, in this test? But Abraham is holding on by faith. Say, Hebrews 11 tells us, or says to us, that he had faith that God could raise the dead. Verse 6, the boy says to him, "Dad, the wood is here, you know, but where's the sacrifice? The fire is here. Where's the sacrifice? Where is the lamb?" And Abraham responds, saying, "God himself will provide a lamb." There was no lamb there. They were walking up the mountain. 3 day journey processing this challenge of faith. In verse 12, after Abraham is about to kill his child, he said, "It's hateful. I do not like it." And God stops him. He says, "Now I know that you fear God, for you have not withheld your only son." And he turns around and there's a lamb that is found in the thicket. I also love in the story of Ishmael and Hagar that Hagar's eyes are open and she sees a well that hadn't been there before when they're dying of thirst. God provided for both here in the story. I think there's something fascinating that would be lovely to pick out of that. A promise that's tested. Think of the story of Job, that God gives permission for the evil one to come into the courts of heaven and within this to destroy Job's family, his health, and his wealth. Again, it's horrible. But in Job's reaction, though he slay me, yet will I hope in him. And maybe this morning you are in a time of testing and a time of pain and hurt that God has allowed. What does this mean for us? What is the challenge of this story? One of my favorite Christian musicians, I know it's one of Dave's as well, is Rich Mullins, or the late Rich Mullins. And in a little interview, Rich Mullins has said this. I'm going to jump in here just in a little minute. Allow me just to read a little bit, and then we'll pick up on this. He says this: when Christ calls us to take up our cross and follow him, a lot of us think that what that means is that we're supposed to lay down our vices and we're supposed to cling to our virtues. But I think unless Christ is Lord of our virtues become dangerous to us and dangerous to the people around us. And then, as is on the screen, I think that when Christ calls us to take up our cross, what he means is that you must die not only to whatever vices are in your life, you must also die to whatever virtues are in your life. I think that when Christ calls us to take up our cross, what he means is that you must die not only to whatever vices are in your life, you must also die to whatever virtues are in your life. What does that mean? It means Christ wants all of you. Not just to surrender the bad bits and the dodgy bits, but to actually surrender even the things that are good in your life. Everything needs to be laid on the altar. Your vices and your virtues. The bad and the good, all of you, all of me, laying on the altar. And that which is most precious to you. So Dietrich Bonhoeffer, a famous quotation, when Christ calls a man, he bids him come and die. To take up your cross and to follow me. To offer your body as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, because this is your spiritual act of worship. And then don't conform any longer to the way the world lives, but be transformed. Have your mind renewed by the Spirit and by truth so that you can test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. Are we prepared to surrender like that? Because that is what we see here in the story of Abraham. A promise that is tested. It sounds cheap and silly in some senses, but when I was 17, this was a massive deal for me. I had just become a Christian. My hair was kind of out to about here and down to here, and I had my cut-off Wrangler jacket with Led Zeppelin and AC/DC and all in the back of it. My hero was Rory Gallagher, but I'd come to faith, and I played drums in a wee rock band, and I just love music. And I sensed that the Lord was saying to me, Gordy, you need to lay this down. So in our wee roof space, in our semi-detached house, much to the neighbour's annoyance in Orangefield, I packed up my drum kit and I put it under the desk that was in my bedroom. Mr. Vandeweever's laughing because I taught his Stephen how to drum as well. And you can identify with the story. The drum kit got packed up. The drum kit was put under the desk, and I said, Lord, if you want me to use it, you make it clear to me. And for 3 months, no drumming. And I loved my music. But this was like a test, a surrender, to give up that which I loved the most as a hairy 17-year-old. to lay it at the Lord's feet and say, whether you want me to use this not or Lord or not, Lord, I am happy with that. That was my test in just coming to faith. Because the music would have gotten in the way of me living and following Jesus. What might it be for you? Is there something now that the Lord is putting his finger in your life and saying, this may be even a good thing, it may be a virtue, but you need to lay it down. If you're to follow me wholeheartedly, you need to lay this down. Because faith and becoming more like Jesus is not 30 seconds in the microwave. It's a slow cooker. It's a slow burn as God molds and shapes and moves us along. And there are marks along that way. We hold on to God's faithfulness. He who calls us is faithful. We depend on him. We follow him. But faith is built over the long haul. And our faith involves sacrifice and commitment. What does this mean for you or for I? It made me think about the microwave and the slow cooker. It might take a bit longer, but it tastes all the better for it. What's the application of that in our faith, in our walk with Jesus over the long haul? By faith, Abraham, what? By faith, Gordy. By faith, Chris. By faith, Susan. By faith, any of us this morning, what is the application? God promises and he is faithful. Promise fulfilled. We may be living in the frustration of that promise at the moment. Or may be walking through a test of that promise. But he who called us is faithful. And he will bring us to the end if we trust in him. Can we just be quiet for a moment? Maybe the band would come up and get ready. We're going to sing two songs together. And Andrew, we're just singing them straight both through. Can we just quiet ourselves for a moment and allow me to get down below as well? But let's just close our eyes, bow our heads, and settle for a moment and consider what the Lord may have said to us through these words.